give it up for Lorraine. Lorraine is an incredible woman. Lorraine's in Bray longer than I'm in Bray. She's OG Bray member. And Lorraine, we just love you. We appreciate you. We value you. Really looking forward to what you have to say. So we give her our attention this morning, guys, yeah? Give it up again for her.
Good morning, brethren. we're gathered here today. It's all about the wine, by the way, Rob. Jesus knew that. So, I don't know, does anyone know why I became Christian? Well, anyone who actually knows me really would know why would I do anything. And it's basically out of sheer temper, right? So, at the beginning, anyway. So, I can see some of you know me so well and are nodding. But I didn't have the worst childhood, but my mother had a lot of mental health issues. And her temper was just incredible. So I spent most of my time locked in the hall press, which sounds horrific, but it was easier than being dragged around by the hair and kicked and punched, you know. So I did a sort of relationship with God when I was in there because I never felt I was on my own for some strange reason. And when I look back on it, I don't get a fear of, I actually see myself kind of trotting in, you know. So I did have a relationship with him. But subsequently, as I grew up to be a very angry bird, right? And I always felt people were out to get me. And I didn't trust anyone. And I certainly really didn't think much about it until I moved into my estate and I met Ray and Sue McGee. Well, met is a bit of a strong word when I'm talking about Ray, because the first time I saw him, I was fast asleep in bed at night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I heard this noise outside the window. So I opened the blinds, and next thing, this torch flashed in my face, and there was a guy standing there, and he had a bottle of bleach in one hand and a sweeping brush in the other, and he said, "No, it's okay, don't panic, I'm all right, I'm a born-again Christian." And he ran. I went, close my eyes, I went, "Oh my God, weirdo alert." So I thought, that's really weird. So next day I saw them across the way, and I managed to avoid them for about 3 days, right? So next thing anyway, on the Saturday, there was a knock on the door. So I opened the door. Yeah, there they were, the weirdos. And basically, they come over to apologise, right? That what happened was their house had been broken into. Ray ran down the stairs, grabbed the first thing that he could find, which happened to be a bottle of bleach and sweeping brush. So I still wasn't going to let them in, but then Ray produced a bottle of wine, you see, from behind her back, and that was it. So now, Sue wasn't a Christian at the time, but we became best mates, the three of us. And in fairness, we had our best laughs when we were slagging Ray off. Now, Sue is an extremely intelligent woman. So at the time, she was a quality controller for a computer department in Bray. So she brains to burn, you know. So Ray would regularly come over to the house and try and convert me. And I would regularly throw the Bible at him and slag him. So they weren't getting on that well because, you know, they were from different, they were being pulled apart completely. And me in full stride slagging mode, I mean, I'm good, you know, wasn't helping. So Sue made a decision without telling me. Now, I'm actually going to say that again because this is important. And I'm going to stare at her without telling me, right? That she was going to ask God if he was there to come and meet her. So the next Sunday, I didn't see her for about 3 or 4 days, which was very strange because we'd be on the phone maybe twice a day or see each other or have dinner. So next thing, I looked out the window, and there's a lot of looking out the window in this, and I saw a load of cars outside her house, so I thought, oh God, I've forgotten her birthday. So I pegged it over anyway. So she opened the door like this. And she looked terrified, absolutely terrified. The guiltiest look I've ever seen in her life. Now, I'm not going to tell you Sue's story, because that's her story, but she's here, and you can have a chat with her afterwards. But she had decided to get baptized. Baptized! I couldn't believe it. It was the biggest shock I'd ever had in my life. I was disgusted. I was angry, more because she hadn't told me. So anyway, I stormed away. Well, actually, after I went, "It's your fault, Ray, she's joined a cult." I stormed off, wouldn't speak to her. So I didn't see her for a couple of weeks, and then she called over. She had another bottle of wine. And there's a theme in this. But so she told me that she had met Jesus and everything had changed for her. And I went, "Yeah, well, everything has changed for us, right? Everything has changed completely. I don't care." And that was it. Threw her out. Finished the wine, threw her out. But I was terribly upset. Like, I just couldn't get my head around the fact that this extremely intelligent woman had done this irrational and stupid thing and joined a cult. So I came up with this master plan. I decided that I'd find out all about this cult and I would rescue her. You know, that went brown. Not that I didn't believe in God, I did. But this fundamentalist stuff was seriously dangerous, you know. So I started to go to the library and I got books on Christianity, books on Jesus. We went to the library quite a lot. I don't know if you remember that, Jason. You thought it was for you. Wasn't. So I found it, actually there's a very good one. I don't know if it's still in print, but it's called The Trial Against Jesus. And on the jury, there's an atheist, an agnostic, a Darwinist, a historian, a scientist. And it's brilliant. And so it goes through all the questions. So then I was able to play devil's advocate with her and ask her all these things. And I kind of had answers, you know. But it was very strange because she'd only just become a Christian. Oh my gosh, she was so wise. I mean, she killed me every time. It was very annoying. But it was still niggling at me. How could somebody intelligent fall for this, right? So I started going through all the angles. I was going through a pretty bad separation myself. So one night they came over all lovely and Christian. And they said, can we pray with you? So I said, yeah, okay, if you want, right? So a lot of rolling of eyes. So we knelt down in my front room and we held hands. So I'm going, I'm spending my time in knots, right, while they're praying. But that was it. They went off and I went to bed. And that night I woke up, and the only way I can explain it is I had the most incredible feeling of love, right? I just felt somebody had their arms around me, and I felt, and very clearly, a voice saying, it's going to be okay. So before I knew it, I'd saved myself and not her, you know, so... But who would have believed it? Who would have believed it? None of my friends, anyway, particularly my hockey ones, who, on a very quiet night, still night, you can still hear them laughing in the distance. So anyway, I was a Christian, but I was an angry one. Remember from before? So I didn't want to be one. I mean, why should I? So then they brought me to church. Right, you can imagine how that went. I couldn't get it. Why sing the same song a few times? What's the crack with the hands in the air? Why the hour-long sermons? Seriously. But the most important thing was everybody seemed happy. I wasn't. Don't forget, I was angry. And I couldn't look at people. I was so lonely, and all these Christian couples made me sick. So I developed a flasher unit on my head, that if anyone approached me, people would come up, and I'd go, and it would flash, go away, or something to that effect. Mary Fitz took a beating with this a couple of times. She'd come over like, and I'd go, and she'd back off, you know. So, but she kept coming, you know. Every time I turned around, she was standing there. Eventually I relented, arms folded. Yeah, and that was it. But there are a couple of reasons that I actually felt like this. First of all, there are loads of families there, and they all seem so much together than my family. I mean, my family has, somebody has a finger on the self-destruct button all the time. None of us know which one is going to push it. I mean, generally my mother, but, you know, we can all do it. And they made me seethe with anger, because secretly, you believe you're the abnormal one in this situation, and that all these people are together, and all these families are together. So, right, I sat there, I was a very angry Christian, and I'm funny, I'm sure some of you who don't really know me think, oh gosh, she's a grand little owl one with her lovely Christian son. She has it all together. Just saying. So I spoke to God and I shouted at him. I do have an odd relationship with him. I pray, but I shout as well. But I did keep kind of trying to keep reading books in the Bible, now only to prove him wrong though, right? Or nothing else. But I read a book by a girl called Jennifer Lacrombie, I think her name is, and I read this passage. I go to church. I feel as though I'm a fly on the wall. Everyone looks maddeningly happy, which makes me feel as though I'm rubbed with sandpaper. I'm afraid to tell anyone in case they start looking for my secret sins. Wow, that was me. And of course people try and help, but the last thing you need is Christian platitudes. People have done that to me and I've managed to just stop short of murder. So I just walk away and leave them lying there. So now I'm angry, frustrated, unhappy, but incredibly righteous. Anyone see Lord of the Rings? So think Gollum. In fact, it made me really uncomfortable looking at him. I mean, you should have heard some of the conversations that went on in my head. Oh, look at her, she's really happy. Yeah, well, you're not. Oh, but I'm very pleased with her. Yeah, but you're not, so tell her she's fat. And I go, hang on. But has anything changed? Well, kind of. Firstly, I met my girls, my mad Christian friends. If anyone thought Ray McGee was mad, you haven't a clue. I don't know, I always had this thing that Christian women, well, apart from Sue, would be very boring, would wear brown, be all holy. Not so. They are the funniest, warmest, supportive people in the world. I spend my time laughing when I'm with them. And they're all as bold as brass underneath. And that appeals to me. I'd be lost without them. But I was still me. So I'm isolated, bitter, lonely, angry, depressed, fed up, and no one else has ever been like this. No one understands. So all this culminated in me and God having a spat. So like I said earlier, everything was getting on top of me. I was in a very dark place. And I'm going to say something that's probably going to shock some of you. You know, Jay found a lump in his neck. No, that's not the shocking thing, by the way. We went to the most stupidest doctor I was ever at. And between him saying, oh, you have to go to A&E immediately, and oh, this is terrible. And in fact, it was nothing. But I was so upset. So I went into the loo, and I very silently said, you let something happen to him, I'm going to take you down. Because I know it all. I've read everything. I've seen everything. Try it. So I said, and I'm not talking to you again. So stuff it. So that was it. So I came out. So within 10 minutes of that decision, the phone rang. And it was somebody who was in a similar situation. Now, there was an awful lot going on in the church that I was in at the time, right? But they felt that God had abandoned them. Of course they did. But they're mad because God had abandoned me. He certainly hadn't abandoned anyone else. So I spent 30 minutes convincing them of this, right? I think I might have even used the scripture. I don't know. But I calmed them down, gritted my teeth and said, that was a favour, right? So suddenly a lot of people who were in the same spiritual situation started ringing me and going through their problems. As if I wanted to hear. I have enough of my own. I had loads of phone calls that night. I threw myself on the bed face down. I was going, I can't cope with this. Why are you doing this to me? But he was a clever God, wasn't he? So when I woke up, I was secretly pleased that people were seeking me out. And the reason for this is because I don't have one biblical answer. There's nothing that I have. But I do believe I'm spectacularly and very visibly flawed. And people find it sometimes easier to talk to somebody who is like that than somebody who's very blessed and has that all together, you know? So I started to come around. And every now and again, I'd hold my hands up and smile at people. But I certainly didn't believe that God would answer any of my prayers. And then something very strange happened. So the whole situation was peculiar from the start to finish in the way it happened, both spiritually, physically, everything. So I was traveling to work on the 13th of February, 12 years ago. And I saw a blind girl walking along the Rock Road. I'd never seen her before, but apparently she'd taken that journey every day. For some reason, this time I noticed her. So she's smiling for her. So anyway, I was traveling to work the next day. It was Valentine's Day. It was freezing. The ground was covered in frost. And she was walking along smiling. So again, I was looking at her. But suddenly I felt this over my stomach. Something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. And I was actually looking for somewhere to park the car. And next thing, there was coming up this way. It's just outside Carol and Kinsella's, right? I was driving that way. Coming up this way, there was a guy in a moped. And he was driving along, really slowly. But next thing, he hit black ice. So he slid. So the bike slid out on the ground. And he actually slid right on the ground, turned around to face a little van coming towards him. So the guy in the van hammered on the brakes, but he jackknifed. So we hit the blind girl straight in the head. She went 12 feet up in the air, over the wall, Carol Kinsella, and I could hear the smack on the ground. So I'd actually managed, everybody stopped, it was like stopped dead, and I actually managed to fly across the road in the car, up on the path, got out of the car, skidded on my ass beside her. And I will never forget the scene that I saw. There was so much blood. She was fitting, she was choking. And I said, Jesus, come and help me here, I don't know what to do. And next thing, this voice, just on my shoulder, just this girl said, hi, I'm an emergency nurse, I've just come off shift, do you know how to cope with this situation? I said, no. She said, will you listen to me? So I said, take over. So she sat on the ground like this, right, and she put the girl's head on her knees, and I lay down the whole length of her, and we literally got her up like that. Now, what came out of her mouth was just unbelievable. And she didn't have a back of her head. Back of her head was gone. So it was just awful. So anyway, while I was doing this, I could see out of the corner of my eye the poor man that had hit her. The guy that was on the bike, he stood up and he was thanking him. He was hugging and they were saying, "Oh, thank you so much for not killing me," because he could have ran over him. And next thing he turned around and his face just went, he said, "I did that." And I was going, it wasn't your fault. So anyway, the ambulance came, got in. I saw this guy arriving who obviously was Jason, the boyfriend. And I could hear this wailing going on. And then Pascal, the guy who'd hit her, his family arrived. So then I left. So I went home and I was covered in blood from head to toe. So I called over to Ray and Sue. And Ray went, "A blind girl on Brook Road." He said, "Maria, that's my Maria." So she had been on his route and he'd helped her get on and off the bus all the time. And so he rang his church. He rang Cornerstone. And and he rang Cornerstone and I rang my church. And I rang Mary, who was Pascal's wife, and she got the Catholic Church involved. So suddenly, and this was the first time I could see the body kind of coming together. Everybody praying for this one girl. So that night, I was about 12 o'clock at night, I just said, "Oh, here," and I rang the hospital. And this guy picked up the phone and he said, "Hi." I said, "Look," I said, "I'm terrible sorry, I'm not a member of family, I'm not anything, I was at a terrible crash today." And he said, "Oh yeah, Maria." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, I'm the emergency doctor that was with her, is with her all day." And he said, "This is very strange," he said. "We don't normally send them to Beaumont when they're this bad." Now, she had what he called an eggshell. He starts telling me all this. He said, "She's an eggshell fracture, the back of her head," which basically means there's nothing there. "She had a fracture here, her nose was broken, her eye socket was broken." And he said, "Normally we only send them to Beaumont when there's a chance." And he said, "Something is telling me just to send her." So I said, "Oh, go on, send her." And he said, "Do you know what, I think I will." And I was grand. So the following morning I was driving in and there was this guy standing on the side of the road like this. And I was like, "That's Jason, that's her boyfriend." So I stopped the car. Turns out he'd no transport. I was telling him, he was told that she'd walked out in front of the car. I was able to say, no, that didn't happen. So I started bringing him over to Beaumont. And then, of course, I came back to church one day. I came back to the church with him. Somebody said, "So what do you pray?" Because I went in a couple of times with her. Now, she was upside down. Her head was black and blue. It was just awful. And they said, "What do you pray with her when you're there?" And I went, "Pray? I don't." So then I thought, "God, should I pray?" I said, "What do I do?" So anyway, I went home and I did what you're not supposed to do. You know the way you open the Bible somewhere? And I opened it at, "Prophesy to these bones and say to them, dry bones, hear the words of the Lord. This is what the Sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come on you and cover you with skin. I will put breath into you and you will come to life and you will know that I'm the Lord." What? I'm not doing it. I said, "I'm not doing it." I said, "I'm actually not doing it." I was actually terrified. I said, "I am not. There is no chance I'll do that." So I was driving into work the following day. I chucked my Bible on the car seat. It opened at the same passage. I said, "Now you're really taking the mick." So that night I collected Jason and brought him over to the hospital. And I was outside the door. I turned the Bible upside down, shook it round, chucked it up in the air, caught it. Same passage. So I said to him, "I just have to pray this." So he said, "Go for it." So there was no one around, and there's all a bit palaver to get in. So went in, and I knelt down beside her and whispered it to her. And then the whole room, who suddenly appeared, just went, "Amen." I turned around, there's a gang of people there. I got such a fright, I ran out. So I ran out the door. And next thing, Maria jumped up, and she ran out after. Oh, no, she didn't. But she did get better. She did get better. It took about 6 months. And it's classed as a miracle. They have no idea. She had absolutely nothing wrong with her. I was praying that she'd get her sight back, but she didn't. But myself and my Jason were at guests at her wedding, which was lovely. And he actually left the bank that he was working in and became a minister. So I began to see things a little bit differently, you know. And I stopped being angry. They're all looking incredulously at each other down there. So now I was believing and functioning Christian. Did some things change for me? Well, of course, I had my amazing Christian friends. I started to come to Liberty for the first time and actually felt comfortable being me here. Then they asked me to do the door. I practiced my sickly smile. Now, doing the door is the weirdest thing. I mean, there's a whole etiquette to that, right? Because I could see people and they'd hug people. So I was going, do I hug? Do you formally shake hands? Do you just say no? And what do you do? And I got so bad one time, there was somebody coming towards me and I was going through all this. Oh, what'll I do? What'll I do? That I actually went, and I patted them on the head. So I apologise if I'm ever on the door and I hug you when you don't want to be hugged, or I shake hands with you when you need a hug, or I just go and I run away. But I'm still lonely and angry. And I've been on my own for a long time. My friends kept saying, God is someone for you. Sue was saying, there must be some reason that he's not letting you meet him. That went on for about 20 years, this did. And I finally did stop being angry all the time. And then Ray Kelly appeared. So everyone was saying, it's because Ray was younger than me. Had to get that in as well. And he just wasn't ready to meet me and be in a relationship. But I was listening to a podcast that Rob was talking about forgiving. And the bottom line is, first I had to forgive my mother, which is horrendous because it's a daily, hourly thing, and it still goes on. Anyway, then I had to forgive myself for being so angry. Then I had to forgive God because I blamed him for it. Listening to that podcast, it made perfect sense to me. I was just too angry to meet anyone. I couldn't. I've had a relationship. And by the time Ray appeared, I was ready and I was calmer. He's rolling his eyes to heaven, not even looking at him. So a lot changed, but a lot didn't. I still meet people who are out to get me. I still have my angry, please go away sign. But instead of it being there all the time, I have to kind of turn it on. So back to the reason I'm here. And it's literally to encourage people who feel the same. I don't know if any of you do, but you know, you're sitting there, you might feel marginalized, lonely, angry, but you're not on your own. There's no such thing as the perfect Christian family. And there's no such thing as the perfect Christian. But if you can work on, you know, forgiving yourself, stop being angry at yourself, you know, and everyone else, and let God in a little bit. Don't close up shop like I did. I had the most fantastic wall. Donald Trump would have paid me for it. You never know. You might start to relax, you know, and enjoy it. I did in spite of myself. But I have to thank my spiritual mommy and daddy, Ray. Ray, who's gone to heaven recently, who is so missed. He touched everyone he met, and especially for Susie and the boys. And Sue, if you hadn't spent time with me telling me what was what, I mean, you changed my life. I would have lived a very different, depressing, angry life, not knowing the good news, not knowing, you know, you can allow yourself to be happy. So what I'm saying is tell your story to someone, you know. You might tell your story to 1,000 people, but there'll be one person that'll go, do you know what? That rings a bell, that sounds like me. Tell them the good news and go and enjoy life. That's it.
That was incredible. I'm not